The Morning Show. The Home Team. No, it's both. It's The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame.
Crossover, step back!
That's a buzzer! Right here on 960theref.com.
Episode 5 of The Crossover here on 960theref.com. Sam Franco, Chris Brame, happy to be along with you once again. Plenty to get to on this edition of the podcast. We've got some Georgia basketball and some SEC over-unders. That is what we're going to hit coming up on this episode. And we'll just go ahead and dive right in here, Brame. Yonte Maton coming back to Georgia basketball for his senior season. Not like this was a shock or anything, but once he started to do some workouts for some teams, you know, he didn't go to the combine, but he did work out for the Nuggets and the Celtics. That might have worried some people, but he did announce that he is going to come back and try and improve his stock for the pros coming up with his senior season with the Dogs.
Yeah, which will be interesting to see what kind of how his role adapts for Georgia, whether or not he'll have a little more leeway in shooting from the perimeter, taking jump shots. I mean, Georgia needs him if he's going to come and play for Georgia to be a dominant post presence. Mm-hmm. But I think we can all agree that's likely not where he's going to translate to on the next level. And I know those NBA scouts probably want to see that he has that ability to consistently shoot from the perimeter. And he did show last year. I mean, he's got some range from three-point land. He hit some of those last year. It's something he can do. Now, the question is whether or not he can do it consistently and also whether or not that's what Georgia needs or wants him to do, because he can dominate in the paint in the SEC. And I think Mark Fox certainly would want him to take a lot of more of those higher percentage shots.
Yeah, that was the number one worry I had when this news came out. And look, obviously getting him back and having him on the team, much better than not having him on the team. But it's not going to help Georgia if he's constantly out on the perimeter and taking those shots. I mean, yeah, he wants to improve his stock. But as you alluded to there, Georgia needs him down low and on the block.
Yeah, and I think, the guy's going to come back. He's going to be all SEC. He's got a chance to be the player of the year in the conference. He's a terrific basketball player, and I think he's got a solid pro future in him, too. It's just he's not going to be a center. He's not going to be a power forward. I guess that'll be maybe a give and take, is to see how much leeway Coach Fox does give him to, we appreciate you coming back, so we'll – you know, I'll try and give you a little opportunity to maybe showcase what NBA scouts want you to look at. But at the same time, you're here at Georgia, and we got to do what's best for Georgia to give us the best chance to succeed. And that's with Yonte really dominating in the post.
Yeah, and getting Yonte back is good news in the sense that you have a guy who you're going to rely on a lot and is going to be very important, because a guy like J.J. Frazier no longer with the team. So you're going to have to find ways to replicate the scoring that J.J. Frazier was giving you. And the backcourt's going to be very young this year. There's no question about that. You know, Turtle Jackson's back, but you also have the two guards that were freshmen last year will be their sophomore season for Tyree Crump and Jordan Harris. So how Georgia splits the time in the backcourt's going to be interesting. And the big X factor, I feel like, is Rayshon Hammonds and how much Coach Fox wants to play him. You know, if he really is the second best recruit that Coach Fox has pulled in behind KCP, he's got to play. He's got to play as a freshman, and he seems like he could slide right in and fill that small forward slot.
Yeah. I mean, another player I love on the team, too, is Ogbeide. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Ogbeide had his moments last year, I mean, particularly in Rupp Arena against Kentucky, where he scored. Definitely, he still has to get more polished offensively, but he's a great rebounder, gives Georgia a lot of second chances on the offensive glass. But, I mean, there's no question that Yonte's decision impacts Georgia from, here we are again, it's another season where I think we look at this team and feel like, sure, they're a contender to make the SEC tournament, versus one that, I mean, might have been playing on Wednesday of the SEC tournament without him.
Yeah, you mentioned Derek Ogbeide. The play around the rim is obviously very important from him. He's just got to get a little more touch. He goes up a little too strong sometimes with those hook shots and with those layups. And if he can be more consistent doing that and kind of take a step like we saw Yonte Maton take from freshman to sophomore year and even from sophomore to junior year, we kind of need to see something like that with Derek Ogbeide, that improvement. And you've also got some depth with guys like Pop Giada and Mike Edwards on the bench. You've got some recruits coming in, including Conte, the big man out of Brooklyn, New York. So this team, in theory, it's kind of like I was saying last year, this team should be deeper this year than they were in years past. And it's kind of the same thing going forward into this season. You know, this team should be pretty deep. I mean, they've got some big men that can come off the bench. They've got guards, at least depth in that guard rotation. So Georgia, in theory, should be better, should be improved. But, you know, losing a J.J. Frazier is something that they're definitely going to have to figure out how to get those points.
Sure, because, I mean, I think looking at the end of last year, that was the question I kept asking myself is, all right, where's the perimeter scoring going to come from next year? And those games that Mayton got hurt and Georgia was able to tread water in them, I mean, Frazier was the guy that was just going nuts scoring for him and really leading the team there. And I have no idea. I mean, it's a mystery as to what guys are going to step up and try and fill that scoring that Georgia's definitely losing from Frazier. But, you know, for Coach Fox, it's interesting because I think it's Mayton coming back maintains that expectation level of NCAA tournament, or, you know, likely the season's going to feel like a disappointment, versus Mayton not coming back would have at least lowered the bar there. But this will be the third year in a row that Georgia's got a team that you look at and you like the makeup of the roster and the lineup and, you know, feel pretty good that it could be, should be a team that makes it to the tournament. The last 2 years have been disappointing on that front, and you just hope that Mayton's coming back for one more year and this program doesn't end up squandering, you know, what turned out to be 3 years with Yonte, because it's already happened with both Gaines and Mann, and now Frazier's moved on, and Mayton will be moving on after this season. How many NCAA tournament trips were there to show for it?
Mm-hmm. What are your expectations for this team going forward for this season? I think that's a big question because, again, you lose J.J. Frazier, one of Georgia's all-time greatest scorers. So without him there, that's one thing that you would take a step back in. But again, I mean, you're getting Yonte Mayton back. You know, you have a high-profile recruit in Rayshon Hammonds. You have some depth and players that have been in the program for a while. It's kind of like last season. The expectation should probably be getting to the NCAA tournament.
Right, but here's where I am now, though. I'm not going to – I mean, I've been tricked 2 years in a row, so honestly my expectation for this year's team is it's going to end up in the NIT. And if you think that they're going to make it to the NCAA or should, you're going to end up being let down until they prove different and maybe actually go and make it. I'm not going to get my hopes up this year thinking that Georgia's going to have a really strong season and get back on into that bracket in March. So my expectation is we're going to see them in the NIT again, hopefully playing someone other than Belmont.
If that is the case and they're back in the NIT, does that signal the end for Coach Fox?
I mean, it's going to become harder and harder to justify keeping him. And I know, I mean, right now the strongest case for him is, yeah, and he did inherit a mess that with the years under Coach Felton. And Georgia's definitely been a better program, nearly getting to 20 wins almost every season, have pretty consistently now gotten into the postseason, albeit not the NCAA tournament, but at least the NIT, whereas there weren't like any postseason berths under Coach Felton. But, you know, then I think you get to you've come to the same point I feel like we kind of were in those last years with Mark Richt in the football program, is has a limit been reached? And this is as good as it's going to get. And granted, knowing that it could be a lot worse, I still have that nagging feeling that over the last couple of years, I mean, things could also have been better for Georgia, but just haven't been. And here we are 2 years in a row in the same postseason tournament. None of us wanted to see Georgia in playing, oddly enough, the same exact team. And this year, the Dogs didn't even win the game.
Yeah, exactly. So the expectations should be that Georgia's competing for the NCAA tournament every year, but unfortunately I think some down years have kind of shifted that a little bit. So if you are a Georgia basketball fan, it has been a little bit of a rough spell here. But like you said, though, I mean, Georgia is doing things. They're improving their win total. They're getting better. But 20 wins isn't a guarantee into the tournament anymore. And I think the big weakness under Coach Fox has been these slow starts. That's what's kept you out of the NCAA tournament. You look at last season, that loss to Marquette and the loss to Oakland on the road, you win those two games, you're in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, there have been those bad non-conference losses. They seem to be, they're fewer and fewer now. But yeah, that home loss to Marquette, and especially the way it happened, the Dogs really mostly got blown out in that game. I know Georgia made a run in the second half and got it down to one.
Mm-hmm.
And then just like that, Marquette had gotten it back up to double figures, and the Dogs really weren't in contention anymore after that. And then blowing that lead, yeah, for sure, on the road at Oakland. I mean, to be fair, I mean, that was one game you could – it was a couple days before Christmas. You're going up to Oakland, Michigan to play. Those are the games you always have these nervous feelings about, like, boy, that's not going to be a great spot going on the road a couple days before Christmas. Where's everyone's focus going to be? But then, Georgia came out and played great, and then for whatever took a nap or whatever reason just took a nap in the second half.
Yeah, the close but no cigar thing is a problem too with Georgia basketball. You know, you took Kentucky to overtime in Rupp. You know, you went to overtime down at the O'Connell Center down in Florida, and you had a really tight game with Kentucky here in Athens. But, you know, close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades, man. Like, you got to win some of those games.
Yeah, and then, I mean, those, and just one of those might be the difference between being in the NIT and being in the NCAA tournament. So that's another, to go back to the issue of Coach Fox, is I feel, and I guess last year there ended up being one RPI top 50 win. Vandy mm-hmm. would have ended up in there.
Yeah.
And, you know, other than that, over the last five seasons now, you've got to go back to two that Georgia had over Missouri back in 2013. Mm-hmm. And Missouri ended up exactly with an RPI of 50. So I feel like, you know, with Coach Felton, the winning percentage, or with Coach Fox, the winning percentage is definitely much, much better. But I can't imagine that he's winning any more games against RPI top 50 teams than Dennis Felton was. I mean, because Coach Fox really isn't beating any of them. That the place where the difference is at least Georgia's not losing to teams with triple-digit RPIs.
The pressure on Coach Fox will be immense this year. There's no question about it. And getting Yonte Maton back probably helps that out a pretty
sure,
good amount.
Sure, because it maintains, I think, that feeling that, yeah, I mean, Georgia should be pretty good this season, because one thing the Dogs are going to have now every time they play is one of, if not the best player on the court.
Yep, so we'll see what happens with Georgia basketball, but again, it was good news for them to get Yonte Maton back. All right, we'll switch gears here on the crossover. Sam Franco, Chris Brame along with you. And the SEC over-unders have been set. CG Technology, a Las Vegas sportsbook operator, released its first over-under on for the win totals for the teams in the conference. And no shock here, as the Alabama Crimson Tide have the highest over-under at 10.5. So, Chris Brame, what are your thoughts on the 10.5 number for Alabama?
I wouldn't take the under. Even though Alabama does open with Florida State, let's say Florida State won that game, then all of a sudden, you know, Alabama's got to run the table in the SEC. But, I'm not messing with the tradition in the recent history we've seen with the Tide. I would take over there or nothing at all. And as much as I'd like to think that, you know, Florida State's going to be a great team this year, and that's Florida State and Alabama, of course Florida State's got a chance to beat them. Right now, Bama's like a touchdown favorite in that game, and we see every year Bama in these season openers, they've got the entire offseason to get ready for them, and they just they steamroll.
Here's my question. If it's a 10.5 over under, that means that two losses would be the under.
Yeah.
So where are there two losses on this schedule? You looked at Florida State as a possibility as being a loss. At Texas A&M maybe, although, I mean, A&M is not been great in recent years. It ain't going to be Vanderbilt. It ain't going to be Ole Miss. I mean, Arkansas.
I'm never going to say LSU doesn't have a chance to beat them, even with O.
And then Auburn this year, a lot of people are expecting them to be much improved and could be a team that is able to contend with Alabama.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. I mean, again, we're talking about a league last year where, and that's, I think it's reflected in the totals outside of Alabama, where the LSU is sitting at 9. Then you got three teams that have totals of 8, including Georgia. But, I mean, a year ago, the team that went to the Sugar Bowl out of the SEC was 8-4 and didn't get a first down in the second half against us here in Athens. So that pretty much sums up what the SEC was like last year behind the Tide.
Yeah, you mentioned LSU there. They come in at 9, like you said. They have an interesting schedule.
They're going under.
Under the 9.
They've only got 3 SEC home games.
That's true. And that, a lot of that has to do with the flipping around of the Florida series there, and Florida will get back-to-back home games against LSU this year and next year. They start with BYU,
And I believe that is a neutral site game.
It is. I think it's in Houston, maybe. I don't know exactly
correct.
Where. It's in either Provo or Baton Rouge.
Yeah, and that'll be one that they should they'll be expected to win and should win. Although, remember last year they did play in that Lambeau Field game and lost to Wisconsin. The BYU game is at NRG Stadium in Houston. In the non-conference, they also play Chattanooga, Syracuse, and Troy. And in the SEC, like you said, only three home games, A&M, Arkansas, Auburn. So that is going to be rough for them. They play Alabama in Tuscaloosa. They play Tennessee in Knoxville, Florida in Gainesville, Ole Miss in Oxford, and Mississippi State in Starkville. So they do have some rough go of things. So a push would be three losses and a under would be four. So are there four losses there? And just going on the road in the SEC ain't easy.
Well, I definitely wouldn't take the over. I mean, I guess I could see nine wins. If we give them that they sweep their non-conference and go 4-0 there, then I don't see 6-2 in the SEC when you only have three games at home this season. So it would take 6-2 in the SEC, giving them 4-0 non-conference to go over nine. I mean, they could certainly do 5-3 in the SEC and be right at nine. So I wouldn't take the over for sure. I mean, if anything, I would take the under and then hope for, all right, well, the worst I'm going to get is a push at nine.
Yeah, and I think there's just a lot of unknown with LSU, with Matt Canada coming in and being the offensive coordinator. It's going to be the first full year under Coach O. So there's more unknown about them, and that would make me hesitant to even think about taking the over. And then, obviously, you had the arrest recently of Leonard Fournette.
That's right.
And I'm not misspeaking there. Leonard, or is it Leonard? I would think
it might be
Leonard.
I don't know.
But either way, it is Leonard Fournette's brother who is listed as a running back on LSU's team, and he was arrested for using a fake ID at a Baton Rouge casino. So, great start.
Is that wrong? Just trying to get in, and
he's just trying to roll some craps, man.
Yeah.
That's all he's trying to
do. So I wonder if his brother like said, "Hey, here's a little money," and then Leonard or Lanyard decided, you know what, I'm going to go blow this at some underground casino.
Yeah, the reason we don't know how to pronounce his name is because I've never heard of.
Well, because they have Darius Geis,
and
I know how to pronounce his name.
That's also correct there. All right, Auburn is one of the three teams that you were talking about. There set at eight. And Auburn's interesting this year because they do have Jared Stidham coming in at quarterback, and I think that will give them the best quarterback play that they've had arguably since Cam Newton. I mean, you know, you have a guy in Jared Stidham who played well at Baylor and comes in with some weapons on the offensive side of the ball. So I look at Auburn's schedule, and it is a tough schedule. They play at Clemson, at LSU, at Arkansas, at A&M. They do close out with three straight home games, Georgia, Lou Monroe, and Alabama. But they do have a rough schedule. So 8-4, do they go over or under that? I mean, I can see a lot of toss-up games on here. I see definite wins, but I don't really see any definite losses.
Yeah, what worries me about Auburn, and I kind of like them too, because I still think they're going to be pretty good on defense, even losing Adams and Carl Lawson. Mm-hmm. But with Kevin Steele there, they finally, for the first time in, what, 4 or 5 years now, have the same defensive coordinator in consecutive seasons.
Coach Boom only lasted, what, a year there?
A year. Yeah. And then I guess he replaced Ellis Johnson, and then you had Steele. So I guess it's 3 years.
Yeah.
But here's my problem with Auburn now is I feel like there's a lot of like growing buzz around them with Stidham, and I think Stidham's going to end up being a lot better than Jeremy Johnson was, because he fits that Malzahn offense. He's got some wheels and he can run, but I'm always troubled with teams that sort of generate, you know, a bit of preseason hype, and they, you know, I mean, just mediocre last season. They've got more of a history of kind of letting you down than they do of being good.
I agree. All right, we'll jump to another 8 over-under team, Florida. And I see under here. I mean, I think that Florida lost all of the defensive recruits that Muschamp had in there, and McElwain did a pretty good job at saving the recruiting class from being just a complete failure. But still, they're behind a lot of teams in the SEC in recruiting. And they start the season off in Dallas against Michigan. I put an L right there immediately.
Michigan's got nothing coming back, though.
That's true. They did lose a lot. They lost Taco Charlton. They lost Jabril Peppers.
They lost every defensive starter.
But yeah.
They lost every defensive starter. They lost their top two leading rushers. I think their top three receivers. They've got Spates back at quarterback. I'll be honest, I kind of like the Gators in that first game, but I will take the points just to be on the safe side.
But what does Florida have?
I agree with you. Florida's lost some guys defensively too. I guess, Antonio Callaway is a really good player. He just got arrested last weekend.
Yeah, pulled a Riley Ridley.
Yeah, but
Elijah Holyfield.
I think Florida has more. They're a little more lax on that stuff than Georgia is. So I have no idea whether or not he's going to miss a game or not. Probably not, since their first game is against Michigan. Mm-hmm. Here's my trouble with Florida, and it kind of relates to Georgia. Is that Georgia's the team that's getting all the preseason hype. This is the team that's they've got experience. They've got everyone back on defense. They were really good last year. But no one's talking about Florida. And Florida's a team that for the last 2 years has gone to the East. So that's what has won the East. So that's what troubles me about the Gators, is they're like the sleeper in the division. But but that being said, we're talking about the SEC East. So, I mean, 8 wins might be the max for them. A lot of it could swing on whether or not they beat Michigan.
That's true. We'll jump to Tennessee now, who's over-under set at 7.5. And for me, this is the year that costs Butch Jones his job. I feel like, last year he had a chance to do something great. They didn't. He got kind of snippy and goofy with some of the things he was saying in the media, that champions of life thing and stuff like that. So you see that. And it's kind of like, is he losing it a little bit? And they have an interesting schedule. There's not really any guaranteed wins other than like Indiana State and UMass. Southern Miss, I wouldn't even call a guaranteed win. That's going to be a tough game. I believe Kentucky opens on the road at Southern Miss.
After losing to them last year.
Right. So I'm just saying that one, you better watch out. But you look at their schedule, and opening against Georgia Tech on Labor Day at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, tentatively, we'll see if that thing is open or not for that game. But that's going to be a tough game for them. They also have to go to Alabama, which we'll just go ahead and mark that one down as a loss.
Yeah, that's a loss.
They do have some of their harder games at home, though. They host Georgia. They host LSU. So you look at those games, and that'll help them out there. But if 7.5... I'm going to go under. I think they went 7 games.
Yeah, what they end up with last year, 8?
Yes.
And that was with,
Josh Dobbs.
Now
they don't
Barnett,
have a quarterback.
Yeah,
right.
That was with this experienced team. Alvin Kamara was there. So
I think the wheels fall off.
Yeah, they needed a Hail Mary to beat us.
Mm-hmm.
So I would hesitate to look at to take the over 7.5 there. And that would be, even if you give them, all right, they go 4-0 non-conference, but are guaranteed at least one loss in the SEC. So, yeah, that's all those numbers are right on there.
Yeah, they
about
are.
Yeah.
All right, we'll hit some of these a little quicker before finishing up with Georgia, just because, we've kind of hit some of the teams of interest. Texas A&M is 7. They start the season at UCLA. I don't really know what to think about Texas A&M. I mean, a 7 over-under, I could see that being a push.
Yeah, I know. They've got Christian Kirk, who figures to be one of the top draft picks out of the conference next year in the NFL. They are losing Myles Garrett defensively. Don't know what their quarterback situation is going to look like. They've had all those guys transfer. But, 7 or 8 wins sounds about right for A&M.
Also, in that general area, Arkansas. And this is a very important year for Brett Bielema. I think he is a guy who's also on a little bit of a warm seat, if not just a straight-up hot seat. They play at Alabama, at LSU, at Ole Miss. The game against TCU, I'm not exactly – is that a neutral site game?
No, it's in Fayetteville.
Okay, they're playing in Fayetteville. And they also have their every year neutral site game now, where they take on Arkansas in
Dallas.
Dallas, yeah. That's right. Although
the Southwest Classic.
They take on Texas A&M. Pardon me, I didn't mean to say Arkansas. But, they are playing TCU and Fayetteville. 7 for Arkansas. If they don't win more than 7, I think Bielema's out.
I don't see how they do. Because like LSU, because they play that neutral site game every year, Arkansas every other year only has 3 home conference games. Throw on top of that a game against TCU, and since TCU just lost to us in a bowl game, I expect TCU to be a juggernaut this season like Penn State was last year. So I don't see how Arkansas gets past 7. I'll say that.
All right, what about Kentucky? They have an interesting schedule. Like I said, they open at Southern Miss.
Yeah, that's trouble.
And then they host Eastern Kentucky. They also host Eastern Michigan in the non-conference and host Louisville in the conference at Georgia, at Vandy, at Mississippi State, and at South Carolina. They host Florida. They host Tennessee, host Ole Miss. I'll say this. That Florida-Kentucky game this year, and Kentucky has gotten better, they have lost 30 straight years to that team. You think Lexington ain't going to be raucous for that thing?
You hope it will be, but a lot of it might depend on what their record is already coming into that. Like you said, I mean, they could lose week one to Southern Miss, and that could deflate them. Listening to that road schedule, though, I mean, it's not a terrible road schedule for Kentucky. I mean, every single one of those schools you rattled off there, unfortunately, including Georgia, is a game that I don't think it's out of the question that Kentucky could win.
We got two. We'll go with 6.5 is what Missouri has. And this is another team where I'm going to be honest, I don't really have a read on them for this year. They host Missouri State, South Carolina, Purdue, and Auburn to start the season. So 4 straight home games. And then they're at Kentucky, at Georgia. They host Idaho and Connecticut, or travel to Connecticut. That's weird in the kind of middle to back of October when you have 2 non-conference games like that.
Yeah.
But they wrap up the season hosting Florida, hosting Tennessee, at Vandy, and at Arkansas. 6.5, I mean, I could see him getting 6. I wouldn't go over.
They should at least win one more game this season because they lost last year at West Virginia non-conference, so that gave them a non-con loss. I mean, they've got a better chance now, I guess, of running the table non-conference and pick up a win there. The key for them would be, they pulled that upset last year, the last game of the season when they knocked off Arkansas. Arkansas blew that 3-touchdown lead. They're another team. It kind of feels like 6 or 7 is right around that number for them.
South Carolina and Mississippi State are each set at 5.5.
South Carolina, I feel strongly they go under. And Mississippi State, I feel pretty strong they go over. Dan Mullen hasn't finished last in the SEC West since his first season there.
That Mississippi State-Georgia game, is going to be an interesting one.
Yeah, and they've got one of the great quarterbacks in the league, and Nick Fitzgerald. I mean, Dan Mullen is, at this point now, I guess you could argue he's the second-best coach in the conference, too. And so, he's in Starkville. They have not finished last in the SEC West since his first season there in 2009. So, right now, they've got the lowest win total of any team in that division. So, that feels like an easy overcall for me there. And with the Gamecocks, They opened with NC State, closed with Clemson. So they're going to have one more non-conference loss this year than they had a year ago. So if they do 2-2 out of the non-conference, then to go over 5.5, they'd have to go 4-4 in the SEC.
We'll wrap things up here with Georgia. Come back around to them. 8 is the over-under. We all know the schedule, starting with App State. Then they travel to Notre Dame, host Samford. And then the conference slate hits, hosting Mississippi State to start, back-to-back games in Tennessee, at Tennessee and at Vandy. Then they come back home to host Missouri before having the bye week and then traveling down to Jacksonville to take on Florida. They'll wrap up the season in November, hosting South Carolina on November 4th, which is weird. And then at Auburn, hosting Kentucky, and at Tech. So that's how Georgia's schedule wraps down.
Sounds like 12-0 to me.
Yeah, I know, right? I'm going to say over. I don't know how much over. But I do think Georgia wins the East, and I think that – I'm going to be honest with you. I think that they're going to be undefeated 4-0 going into that game at Knoxville on September 30th.
Yeah, I've talked a little bit about the trouble with forecasting Georgia's results this year and kind of going back to last year's is, it'd be nice if Georgia went 7-5 a year ago and you look back and could say, and they were also 0-4 in one possession games.
Yeah.
But Georgia actually went 5-3 in one score games last year. They had a 1-point win and a 1-point loss. They had a three-point win and a three-point loss. They lost a game by 2 points non-conference. They won a game by 2 points non-conference against Nichols. They lost to Tech by 1 point. So, really, I mean, those close wins and losses really evened themselves out a year ago. And also, Georgia went 7-5 with the second-best turnover margin in the conference. So, it's you know, there's not like an obvious area there to pick apart where you can definitely see a no-brainer improvement on the record from a year ago. We just all are having to rely on the idea that the Dogs had some young players in some critical spots last year that naturally should progress. Kirby's in his second year now, and there's been a good history of success with coaches in their second year at programs. Chubb and Michelle are coming back. There's plenty to like about Georgia, but there were still some things about last season that that were ominous.
No doubt about it. So there's our kind of over-under review of the SEC, and college football will be here before you know it, folks. So just enjoy your summer and buckle in as the Dogs will get things fired up against Appalachian State coming up in September. He's Chris Brame. I'm Sam Franco. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Crossover. You can catch us every week on 960theref.com. So be sure to do that, and we'll be back next week with another episode right here on 960theref.com.
You've been listening to The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame on 960theref.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.